I'm Sonia Morton Firth, and today you're tuned in to the Sonia Morton Firth Show. Today, my guest is Scott Walker. Scott has been an executive and leadership coach for 30 years, specializing in peak performance and decision making in challenging circumstances. This is based on years of experience involved in kidnap and ransom negotiations around the world. Scott, a warm welcome to the Sonia Morton Firth Show, and thank you so much for being my guest today.
You're welcome. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Scott, it would be great to hear a little bit more about your journey and how you got to become the coach that you are today, given your background in the police force and helping with kidnap and hostage situations.
Yeah, okay. Grew up in a typical working class family up in Birmingham, and then when I was about 19, I picked up a book in a bookshop by Tony Robbins. Thought, this is a great book.
Yes.
And I read bits of it, but then I put it back down and continued.
Do you remember the book?
It was Unlimited Power, his first one. And put it down, and then went about my day job as a barrister's clerk. And then in the mid-20s, I then moved down to London and joined the police, where I spent the next 16 years having just the best time. Really had a fantastic
in
career.
In the police force?
Yeah, the Metropolitan Police. Okay. And travelled the world, met some amazing people, really worked with some really inspiring people. You know, victims of crime, witnesses, families, and pretty much did everything I wanted to do within the police.
What were you doing at the time for the police?
I did several. The main roles that stand out for me was in the early days, it was as a special branch officer, counter-terrorism, all the kind of super sexy stuff. And then I moved out on promotion to deal with the domestic abuse unit. And I have to say, it wasn't my ideal posting, but it turns out, as these things often are, that it turned out to be one of the best things that ever happened to me. And this is what I'm a big believer in, things happen for a reason, yeah. And it's all about a journey. And it was some of the best 3 years I spent there.
What made it the best 3 years?
Well, if I just say right at the outset, a big believer in things happening for a reason, and everything is an opportunity to learn from that. And the reason I say that, it was when I sat down in my first week running the unit, and then it came back to me as like, well, why am I here? What's the meaning in all of this? And it turned, obviously, my mum was a victim of domestic abuse when we were growing up. Perhaps my mum and dad got divorced, and then we knew partners. And so it was all starting to come back to me. Again, this was always meant to be. This was a sense of purpose, a mission to do the best that we could do for the victims of domestic abuse. And I helped set up this special domestic abuse investigation team. It was a proactive unit. We got some external funding, won lots of awards, helped so many inspiring victims to rebuild their lives. And, you know, we even got featured on the Crime Watch, which was a good reward for the guys and girls on the team to get that public recognition for the great work that they were doing.
Wow, Scott, that sounds fantastic. But just going back to the part you said about your mum, how did that make you feel? Because if this brought up all what had happened as in your childhood with your mum being abused, how did that affect you in your work?
I think it may be one of those things that the feelings or the emotions may have been suppressed, and it was only by getting involved in that world allowed me to process it, but also give back to other people in terms of the victims and their families as well. And it also gave me an insight into, you know, as a 7-8-year-old boy with, you know, in my mind, I was the man of the house trying to protect my mom, yet not being able to do so. And from that, it gave me great strength over the years, which then obviously one of the reasons why I went into coaching, which I'll touch on later on. So.
Okay, so after that period, what made you then go from that to giving up or leaving the police force?
Well, before that, I mean, as I said, I enjoyed pretty much every single day in the police. And I was very fortunate, and one of the roles I did was around helping to manage response to kidnap for ransom negotiations.
Which sounds incredible. You know, I'm thinking of different films, and you've got Mel Gibson there, and it sounds like a very exciting time of life. But what was it really like dealing with those situations?
Yeah, it was an ability to switch like that from going about your day-to-day life with your family to getting a call at 3 a.m. on a Saturday afternoon. It's like, right, okay, you need to get to this location as soon as you can to help the victim and help manage the family or the company, whatever it is, manage that crisis.
And were you successful? I mean, what was the sort of success rate in you getting the people out of that situation?
It's pretty high. And, you know, when I left the police, I went on to help organisations and families do that as well. And there's an extremely high success rate. You know, there's no secrets there that actually there's a 93% success rate or if there's a negotiation that somebody's going to come back out in one piece because it's a business transaction. And the remaining 7% is when the person tries to escape or they get injured or ill whilst...
And people try and actually escape in
those
situations.
Depending on where it is in the world and whatever. Yeah, but by and large, you know, a negotiated settlement... An effective decision-making and general management, crisis management, often. And the communications as well saves the day.
So what traits do you need, does Scott need, to deal with that? What do you have in with you that helps you negotiate with the kidnapper in those situations?
Okay, I think it comes down to a number of things. It's about the ability to create that rapport with somebody. And it's about really trying to get into their mindset of, okay, what makes this person do what they do? What is their map of the world? What is their belief system? What is going on so much for them that they need to do X, Y, and Z? And this is just the same in coaching. So before you can start to influence or persuade somebody or help them in a coaching context, it would be extremely rude or arrogant to say, well, actually, I know what's good for you. You need to do X, Y, and Z. And so, I mean, there's two strands here from the kind of coaching and the softer skills. It is the active listening. It's the genuine interest in the other person, finding out what makes them tick, and actually acknowledging what they're saying. So what I mean by that is people just want to be heard. And there's many ways of saying no or disagreeing with somebody without saying no or I disagree with you. My wife will probably tell you otherwise, but I do my best. And so there's that. And then on the other side of it, from a corporate perspective, in any kind of challenging scenario, it needs that effective leadership and an ability to make clear decisions and have clarity of thought when all around you there's chaos and you've got competing demands.
And in the kidnap situation, presumably it's understanding the mindset of the kidnapper?
It is, and there is a process of leverage, like in any kind of scenario, coaching or otherwise, where somebody has to be motivated to or to a pain point or to a situation where they go, right, okay, I'm now going to go from here to here. I'm going to bridge the gap from where I am to where I want to get to. So there's lots of similarities there.
And has there been any point through negotiations, either with your coaching clients or in the kidnap situation, where you felt like, oh shit, I'm losing, I can't follow through with these negotiations, or it looks like you're losing the battle, the situation?
That's a great, great question. I think over the years, I've developed a coping mechanism, or it's essentially mindfulness, but I was doing it years ago before I even knew what that meant. It was around turning down the volume of that cognitive clutter and chatter that's going on. It's realizing it's not about me, it's about the client, the victim, whoever it happens to be. And it's just, if need be, just simple things like taking a deep breath, understanding, okay, what's our outcome here? What are we looking to achieve? Why do we want that? What's that going to give us? What's that going to mean to the client? Or whatever happens to be. And by having that clarity of thought and purpose really helps drive to a successful outcome. And then, as I said, from the mindfulness practice helps with that as well.
When you say mindfulness, I know you said sort of breath work and calming down? Do you practice meditation or anything along those lines?
Yeah.
Or do you encourage your victims to, or your clients?
Well, I think it's down to the individual, but there's just an abundance of research out there around the benefits of some kind of mindfulness, gratitude, and awareness and tuning in, that actually we're all connected, we're all can be in control of how we respond. And there's a great quote in Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, which, you know, is quite well known, isn't it? But again, I use this with the clients, that, you know, between that stimulus and response, there's that space, there's that gap. And that is the only thing in the whole of the world that you can ever, ever control. It's how you respond to stuff. Yes, we can stack the cards in your favour. Yes, we can make the negotiations as such that the kidnappers are likely to acquiesce and to agree, or as a coaching client that's going to get you to where you want to get to. But ultimately, things aren't always going to go according to plan. People are not going to say what you want them to say or do. Situation, the traffic, taxes, politics, whatever it is, there's so many things outside someone's control. And sometimes just by letting go that need to control things and by stacking things in your favour, then actually it can be quite liberating.
But as a member of the victim's family, and I understand what you're saying, Scott, you're basically saying it's that period of time that's crucial. But I guess as somebody that's going through that, they just want you to get on with it, don't they? Do they put any time pressure on and sort of say, well, come on, just let's get to the... Can we just negotiate here? Can we just say yes to the kidnapper?
This is, again, so many similarities with coaching as well, is that a client, whoever they are, in whatever context, wants quick results. And often that can happen. But it makes sense sometimes to pause, to go deep, to really understand, okay, the strategy about what we're trying to achieve and how we're going to get there, which ironically can shorten the process in the long run. It's about providing a bit of resistance, if it's going to be the kidnappers, for example, or with a coaching client. It's around really putting... it's not going to be a cozy chit-chat on either of these things. It's really ensuring that the client understands, okay, what is it I really, really want here? Why do I want it? What is it going to mean for me? And going deep. So the foundations are laid, as opposed to, yeah, okay, this is just a knee-jerk reaction and an easy-to-achieve outcome. And with the kidnappers, if we give in too soon, they'll see this as an easy win and they'll come back for more later on.
And have you seen that happen before?
Yeah, a couple of times, yeah.
In terms of where you are with your own journey, and you were in the police force, you left the police force and you're now a very successful coach, what brought you to that point?
The coaching.
As a coach and to leave the police force.
Okay, well, I actually got offered some coaching whilst I was a police officer as part of a promotion
Presumably,
process.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember going into the first session, not really knowing much about coaching. This is about 15 years ago, 14 years ago. And I rock up with all my list of issues and questions and challenges and problems in life I wanted the coach to fix. And I went, there you go. And he went, oh, it doesn't work like this, Scott. And it turned out to be like the world's toughest job interview, but with myself, you know, pounding headache, sweaty back. And at the end of it, the coach, Carl, said, okay, well, how do you want to progress this? I said, I want to do what you do. And then did all the accreditations and the qualifications and then coach leaders within the police service and then set up my own coaching business and ran that in parallel. And then when I left the police, I continued that full time. And that just grew exponentially, really, really quickly, working with corporates and business owners. And I've looked back there really. And so building on the kidnap stuff as well, the negotiation, the crisis negotiations, it gave me a real understanding as to what makes people tick. Why do they do what they do? How do people think as they think? And then there are patterns that, you know, hundreds of cases and hundreds of clients, there are themes. There are patterns that show up and it's about understanding, okay, what is your, as I said, what is your map of the world? Why do you see, or what is it that makes you see things the way you do?
And is there a pattern to kidnappers? Is there something that you can put your finger on and say, we tend to see this and a lot of kidnappers, you know, just in case I'm walking down the street and happen to bump into one, is there something that you can put your finger on and say a lot of them have this trait?
It's not as straightforward as that, because for a lot of them it's a business transaction, and in parts of the world this is actually the main means of them making a living. I'm not condoning it by any sense.
And then, of course,
you know, a victim's family, they're not going to see this as a business transaction. No. But ultimately, it is, we've got something that they want and they've got something that we want. And then there's that negotiation. But in terms of personality types, not really. I'm sure there's lots of academic studies out there. But from a practical psychology perspective, there are definitely the things, as I mentioned earlier, people want to get heard. People got something to vent. They've got something that needs to happen in order for them to be happy or feel successful or whatever it is. And that's no different to a coaching client.
So in terms of your own life, have you had traumas that you have gone back to and looked at that and sort of thought, okay, I can kind of benefit from that, or done some coaching on yourself, for example?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, again, from the premise that everything is an opportunity, that, you know, as some great people say, you know, about life happening for you, not to you, is it's seeing that opportunity in every single situation, challenge, problem that arises. And a few years ago, there's a period of 6 months or so, maybe just slightly less, where it was challenge after challenge after challenge, trauma, trauma, trauma. You know, I just left my career after 16 years. I was going through a divorce at the time, a messy divorce, and my mom committed suicide, all within a really short space of time. And very quickly, the sense of identity was just being stripped away. It's like, okay, who am I? What is going on in my world? What, almost, God, what have I done to...
Well, you ask yourself, who are you?
All the ridiculous questions don't make sense to ask. Mm. And it's like, right, stop, get a grip. Not in a sense of pull yourself together kind of unsympathetic thing, but get a grip of the reality. Okay, what is really going on here?
And were you a coach at this point?
Yes,
you were.
Okay. I was. Didn't make it much easier. But what I did, it was digging into the experience, life experience and the coaching experience of, okay, to get a grip of the situation, the reality, don't make it worse than what it is, but get a real grip. Okay, this is going to start with me. There's no one's going to come along and get me out of this hole. And I slid down to a dark, dark, dark place. And
how long were you in that dark place?
Thankfully, it wasn't that long, I guess, in comparison to some people. It was a matter of a few months. But again, okay, so it was a reality check. Okay, where am I? And it was those questions that we were speaking about earlier before we started around, okay, well, so what? What does this really mean? What can I learn from this? Mm. How can I now benefit others from this experience?
How can you bring meaning to your mum's death, though, in terms of how can you benefit from that?
As I said, mentioned earlier, you can't control what happens or what someone else does. But I can control how I deal and how I respond to that. And that's the only thing I could control. I can control what people thought about that, all the circumstances around it, and so on and so forth. But what I could determine is, okay, how am I going to use this experience, traumatic as it is, to help other people who are going through something similar and turn my own life around so as I can inspire and enable other people to live a life that doesn't take them to the place that unfortunately my mom took herself to. And so there's lots of work, you know, like a lot of people, when they go on that personal development journey, you're reaching out for anything to give you answers, but actually it's, you know, like all the sayings is, the road just takes you back to yourself where you started from. And again, it was looking in the mirror, that accountability mirror. Again, it's what I say to clients now, is you could BS everybody around you, but if you look at yourself in the mirror, then you can't hide away from yourself. So it's getting that check on reality. It was looking in the mirror. It was asking myself, okay, well, so what? What can I do now to turn this around, to learn from this, to grow, to help other people? And then the next stage is, okay, well, now what? Now I know what my purpose is going to be. Now I know what I want to achieve. how am I going to go ahead and do that?
And how did you?
That's $1 million question. No, it's about educating myself. It was about doing further coaching. It was learning all different techniques from NLP to many, many others. And it was just doing that deep work and becoming the best coach that I could be. So somebody could be not necessarily in the same situation as me, but they could have gone through something similar or an equally traumatic incident or episode in their life from their childhood or whatever. And so then he was then putting, so once you know what, so what, and now what, it's actually putting the stuff into practice. And then I was just reviewing it, just checking in with myself, okay, how am I doing? How's my internal barometer turning up? And one of the best things I ever learned was around about letting go. Because it's all very letting go. It's all very easy around achieve. I see this with clients, particularly in the corporate world. It's all about the bottom line. It's about the house, the car, the partner, the holidays, whatever it is. And that's understandable.
And presumably the leaders, the execs. I mean, I used to work in that world, and it's all about control.
Yeah. And you ask yourself, okay, every point what is it? What is it you need to have that control? What is going on for you or has gone on for you that means that you need that control in order to feel significant, for example? And what is the real emotion? What's the real thing that's going on for you? What's the real story, the truth that's going on for you in this? Yeah.
And how do you get them to let go? Because it sounds like such an easy expression. You know, three words, let go, or two words, let go. But how do you get somebody just to let go?
It is, and people go, well, actually, what am I letting go of? It sounds simple, as you said, but actually can be one of the hardest things in the world. And when I ask clients, okay, well, you know, how could you let go of this? It's like, what do I need to let go of? And so it's doing the work, it's getting deep with them to actually understand, okay, what primary emotions are holding you back here? You know, what's your map of the world that is getting in your way? What obstacles are preventing you from achieving this? And then it's just having some kind of trigger for them that when they feel themselves either outwardly or inwardly rolling their eyes, casting judgment, you said this or did that, which means I'm now doing this. You know, if you catch yourself saying, you know, you said this and therefore I'm now doing this, or because you said whatever, that's kind of sliding into that judgment. It's that suffering state that, you know, doesn't matter what tradition you've followed for thousands of years, have talked about, you know, falling into suffering or enlightenment or whatever it happens to be, or below the line indicators. If you get triggered,
and everyone knows what it, I mean, I can feel myself getting triggered in different environments. Let's face it, we all get triggered if we're on the phone to Sky.
Yes.
Or, you know, we're in a queue for a
it is.
Sainsbury's and we've chosen the wrong queue and someone's taking forever. There's something in this that gets us.
And it's the moment you put your intention out there, okay, I'm now going to let go of things, I'm going to live this purposeful, meaningful, fulfilled life, I guarantee you, the universe will go, oh, really? Well, let's just make sure, just test to see how committed you are to this journey. Mm-hmm. And it will give you a gift. It will give you a stroppy customer service person on the telephone. It will give you somebody on the public transport. It'll be one of your kids, work colleague, the weather, whatever it happens to be, you'll be given opportunities to put into practice. And so
that's so true.
It is though.
So basically, by letting go, the universe will test you, could test you at that point.
But again, it depends on, you know, Albert Einstein said the primary question to ask is, do I live in a friendly or an unfriendly universe? Is the world out there set up against me? Or
I don't believe it is, but I guess
everyone... actually, is everything an opportunity to learn from, to help, to grow, to encourage, to enable, whatever it happens to be? And so what I say with clients is notice that trigger. Okay, what is the stimulus? Where does that show up in your body? Because it's usually some kind of somatic feeling.
Yeah, so I feel it either in my heart or my stomach.
Tense stress in the shoulders or whatever. And so it's, okay, well, if you could write this objectively as a news headline, what would it be? And for example, you know, we could be WhatsApping and, you know, we just start out dating with each other. You send me a message, and then you see me typing, and then I stop typing, and then I suddenly go offline. What's going through your thoughts?
What was he going to write? Yeah. Oh my gosh, he was going to write something that I wasn't going to like to hear. Oh my God, he's not into me anymore. Yeah, my mind would just go completely,
etc. And we do that for all sorts of things, and we just we fill the void with just unnecessary weariness and suffering. And so the first thing to do is, okay, what is this objectively saying? Okay, man doesn't send text message, or starts text message but doesn't send it. Okay, and it's about removing the sting, the poison from that. And it's asking yourself, okay, well, what meaning am I giving to this? Is it an empowering or disempowering one? Am I above the line? Am I below the line? How is this helping me? And actually, and then also, is there more than one explanation for this? Hmm. Could he be actually, been involved in an accident? Or there's an old lady fell over in front of whoever it is and they've stopped to help them, for example. And so once you can get the objective news headline, you can work out how it's showing up for you. And then you can apply, what meaning am I giving to this? And what meaning could I give to it? Same situation. Mm. The situation is still the same, but I'm going to give a different meaning to something, which then means my response is going to be different.
But does that take a lot of training? Because what I find is my mind automatically goes to a negative place. Now, I think of myself as quite a positive, glasses half full sort of person. But I could be in those sort of situations and my mind will, 9 times out of 10, go to the deepest, darkest place and tell me something awful has happened rather than...
All right. Well, the classic kind of coaching thing that's going on for me right now is, that 1 time out of 10 that you did manage to do it, what did you do well then?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? So it's fine. There's always a way of helping the client to understand, okay, what is going on for me? Why am I having that reaction to the kids not hurrying out and getting the car to do the school run, or my boss speaking to me in that way? What meaning am I giving to that? Replace the meaning, replace the story, and then our response is going to be different. Yeah. And then actually we have our plans and our outcomes, what we want to achieve for our career or our family, our personal life, whatever it is, and we set the intention, we have all our steps in place. And as I said, most of this stuff, if not all of it, is outside of our control anyway. Yeah, we can make decisions and we can do actions, but actually, we can only control truly
ourselves
and how we respond to stuff.
Interesting.
And that's what got me through those dark days. And now working with clients all over the world, some fantastic clients, with challenges as well as some great opportunities for them to grow their businesses all over the world. And it has just been a wonderful journey. Looking back, I can see why things happened as they did to get me to where I'm fortunate to be today.
Wow, fantastic, Scott. Talking about your current clients today, and they're leaders, executives of corporates.
Yeah, it's a mixture of business owners, small business SME owners, or managing director, C-suite type executives, who they're good at achieving things, otherwise they wouldn't get to where they've got to. But it's for them actually filling that void that can sometimes appear. You get to kind of the 30s or 40s or even 50s and you think, okay, well, actually, is this all there is? This is meeting most of my needs, but there's something not quite there. So what I aim for with them is finding that sweet spot of, you can have all the achievement and that is still fine. Actually, but you've got to enjoy the journey. And unless you can... every step of the way, be grateful for what you're doing and what life is showing up for you. That if you can't be happy when you've got a pound in your pocket, you're not going to be happy if you've got £1 million in your pocket.
And do you find they come to you, your clients come to you, because they're not fulfilled, or is it because of some business reason and they're hoping that you can solve
it? It's both. And there's obviously that need out there for, I need to grow the sales figures by 20%, or I need to... produce X number more widgets or better time management or whatever it is. So on the surface, there's lots of these things which are quite easy to fix. But as you know, from your own experience of working with people, the real issue is 2, 3, 4, 5 levels below that. It's okay, well, you say about time management, But what is it that you're not following through with? Where does that feeling of overwhelm come from? Are there other areas of your life where this is showing up, for example? And as I said earlier, this is not a cozy chit-chat. It's, you know, Neil Donald Walsh talks about growth happens at the edge of your comfort zone. That's where life begins. Yes. And it's about walking with the client step by step to that edge. And that's where the magic, that's where the dance happens, as I call it with them. Mm. That's where the magic really happens, where they can kind of look in the mirror, that reality check, okay, right, this we're game on, this is it. And they're brilliant moments.
Wow. Scott, at the moment, are you still doing the negotiation as well as the coaching clients?
Yeah, occasionally. A lot of the time is with the coaching now, building the coaching, and that's going to progress out into the rest of the year with the launch of the book later on in the autumn.
A book? Ah, yeah. You're bringing out a book? Can we know the title of the book, or is that...
The working title is Red Centre Leadership.
Okay, I like it.
Based on the experiences I've spoken about, really, around effective decision-making and leadership and how that applies to the wider business context from all the kidnap stuff and from the coaching as well. And the reason for Red Centre is in the police. That is where, that's what's called the Red Centre, where the calls are coming in from the kidnappers. It's where the victim's receiving or the family's receiving the calls. And so for me, the Red Centre is that nucleus within all of us where the gut reactions, the intuition, the motivation, the real raw honesty, the truth that lies within us, that's where that Red Centre is.
We're all different, presumably.
Absolutely. But... and it's very difficult to actually pinpoint an exact location, but we've all got something. This is the focus that we need.
I want to read your book, definitely. Where can the viewers find out a little bit more about you if they're interested in you and your coaching? Do you have a website?
I do have a website, scottwalkercoaching.com, and that's the main port of call.
And we'll put all of those in the show notes.
Yeah.
Scott, I always ask this as my final interview question. If you were to write a message in a bottle that was to be found in about 50 years' time by future generations, what would that message be?
Wow, what a question. It'd have to be something like, be bold. You know, if I could advise people, be bold, be brave, be true.
Scott, thank you so much for being my guest on my show
today. You're welcome. It's been brilliant. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.